Good morning. Thank you for being here. I want to commend the congregation for the selection of this topic. It's unique, but so very much needed. And I appreciate your interest in this and looking forward to our days together. I want to say more at the worship hour about the connections, but this church has been a blessing to my family in a couple of ways. And I so appreciate what you do and who you are, what you've done and what you're trying to do. And I'm very grateful to come and to be with you, get to know you a little bit better, and for us to consider these things together. It's somewhat bodacious for somebody to tell you how to raise your kids. It is, on one hand, a very personal matter. On the other hand, it is a biblical matter. And so you may find this week that there will be some bits and pieces of perspective that I drop in. But the spirit in which I want to approach this coming week is from the Bible. And to get you to look at the teaching and the instruction, the examples and the principles that you can apply to being a father and being a mother. And what I want us to do this morning is to first gain some insight from the Scriptures. Second of all, in our worship hour, I want to provide in this early tone some motivation. But then this afternoon and Monday and Tuesday evening, Lord willing, I want to dive into some specifics, some practical application, some do's and don'ts about raising kids. And then Wednesday night, I do want to talk about, to some extent, some sensitive matters, and then how sometimes our family situation is not exactly ideal. And so what do you do when it's like that? And so I want to end the week, the session at least, Wednesday night, with some comfort and some hope that no matter how difficult your situation is, there are good things you can do and God can help you. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity to be with you. When you hear Bible families, that expression, what do you think of? I mean, do you think of people with strong bonds that just with time, those bonds just get stronger and stronger? Do you think that between parents and kids, it's all hugs and giggles? Do you think that when you hear the expression Bible families, that you're describing in an atmosphere that is just laden with support and understanding and love? Well, when it comes to the real examples of Bible families, that's not always the case. So this morning we're going to look at the first families, not the first family, but the first families. As God is introducing us to His perspective on us, and His perspective on life, and He is giving us in this initial revelation in the book of Genesis a picture of some families, what do we see? Because after all, the initial introduction to family life would be quite, impressionable, wouldn't it? Well, that's what we're going to do this morning, is to look at the first families in the book of Genesis. And immediately what we see is that there are some realities about parenting that's being placed upon us. I want to do this here. I want to just scan through the book of Genesis and talk about several different parents and their children. I don't want to go into every passage because I'm working from the premise that this is the Bible class hour and you are people who are dedicated to reading the Bible and you have studied the book of Genesis before and you're familiar with these characters. And I want you to review these characters and these families with me from the perspective of the experience of being a parent and how that these people had to encounter the realities of being a parent. We start with Adam and Eve and their two sons, Cain and Abel. They had more, but we know about Cain and Abel most of all. Here we have two people who start their family in not the best of circumstances. They have guilt from the disobedience that had cast them from the garden. And what we see that immediately after they make the choice to sin and thus usher in sin into the world, that sin delivers a very heavy blow to their family personally. That Adam and Eve actually saw their son, Cain, rather Abel, die at the hand of his brother. Now, literally see it, but they knew of it. That Cain was very jealous of Abel. Abel was acceptable to God in his worship. Cain allowed his anger to stew, eventually that he struck his brother and killed him. And Adam and Eve suffered something that maybe some of you have suffered. That's a very unique pain, and that is experiencing your child dying before you do. The first parents experienced that. One of the hardest things you can ever experience. The first parents went through that. And so we see at the beginning here that the realities of parenting is that sometimes in families there are going to be conflicts, and that there can be loss, even great loss, and great heartache. When we come to Noah and his wife, who is nameless in the biblical text, we see that they have three sons, and as they experience this great test of preparing the ark for the coming of the great judgment in the flood, that Noah involves his sons, because we see that Noah and his wife and his sons and their wives, Noah's daughters-in-law, are all saved from the great judgment of the flood, which tells us something about Noah, that in his righteousness, that Noah was also a person of influence, that there is no way that he was not a person of influence because of what was about to happen and the amount of preparation it took and the unusual circumstances. For these sons to follow their father meant that he had significant influence upon them. So one of the realities of parents, and this can go positively or negatively, is that parents have incredible influence. Let's not forget that this week. And then we come to Abraham and Sarah. And we see that they are aged before they have children of their own. And finally, they have Isaac, the son of the promise. They are way past the childbearing years, even for back then. And what we see in Abraham and Sarah is this longing for a child, this deep inner desire to have this offspring. And then, in a marvelous fashion, we see it fulfilled, that Abraham and Sarah are satisfied with the son in their old age. What a great experience that must have been for them. And then it just continues, the story goes. Isaac is wed to Rebekah, and they have twin sons, Jacob and Esau. And the sons were very different. The mother had a special affinity for Jacob. The father had a special connection to Esau. And Esau was a man who was not grateful for what he had. He was not an honorable man. The New Testament calls him a profane man. He did not appreciate the birthright of being the firstborn in the family and just, in a loose way, just dealt it out to his brother for some food. But then we also see that Jacob tricked his father to get the blessing that really belonged to his brother Esau. This resulted in threats on Esau's part to kill his brother Jacob. It resulted in estrangement. Jacob had to leave the land of Canaan and for approximately 20 years was away from his father and his mother and his brother. But then Jacob finally returns. They have an incredible reunion and they are reconciled many years later. And again, that's more the realities of parenting and family life. That sometimes there are favorites in a family. There are rivals in a family. And sometimes families go through incredible conflicts, but reconciliation can follow. That's a reality in family relationships. And then it just seems like these families just get more complicated as you go through the book of Genesis. And things just get more extreme the further you go into the book. Because then we have Jacob, who is later called Israel. And he had wives. Actually, he had two wives and two handmaids who basically served as concubines. And through them, he produced 12 sons and one daughter. And in that situation, once again, we see favoritism. We see rivalry and jealousy. We see even violent conflict. The 11 brothers, or at least 10 of the brothers, try to, at first, you think they're going to kill Joseph. They throw him into a pit and then sell him off into slavery, which was, they thought, a death sentence anyway. And so it was just atrocious activity toward their brother. And they're separated for many, many years. Joseph is separated from his brothers. He's separated from his father. But then there is a surprising reunion of Joseph and his brothers. It is choppy waters, but they finally reconcile. And even more so, Jacob is reconciled to Joseph. And they are reunited. And there's a beautiful picture, as the book of Genesis, that's painted for us, of children, siblings, forgiving one another, mostly on the part of Joseph toward the brothers. And so again, we have these realities when it comes to parenting, and that is the challenge of perpetuating some patterns You see, some of the behaviors of Jacob had started with some of the earlier ancestors, with deceit and lying and those kinds of things, with favoritism is perpetuated. And we can perpetuate negative patterns or positive patterns, harmful patterns or helpful patterns. But you see some patterns being perpetuated through these families. They have some family traditions. Some of them were good and some of them were bad in these families in the book of Genesis. And you see that bitterness has a role that plays here. But you also see that in addition to the bitterness and the heartache, that people come to regret some of their behaviors. You see in those latter chapters of the book of Genesis, many years later, that the brothers soften toward Joseph. And even though they don't know he's alive, you see in their expressions that they regret what they had done to him. And then when they do find out he's alive, they're fearful for their lives, but he forgives them. Though he's the most powerful man next to Pharaoh in the land of Egypt, he shows great mercy upon his brothers. It's a mixed bag, isn't it, in the book of Genesis? It's a little bit of everything. And when you look at those lists there of the realities of being a parent in family life, it strikes home, doesn't it? Their experience is much like ours. We suffer through the same kinds of things, conflicts and loss and heartache, experiencing the challenge of how we use our influence as parents. We have certain longings, and sometimes those longings are satisfied. We make the mistake of playing favorites sometimes, and there's rivalry and competition and bitterness, but also there is sometimes reconciliation and forgiveness. And I want you to put all this together with me this morning and consider this list of how that the realities in the book of Genesis about parenting prepares us. And I just thought this was the way to start the series, is to go into the Bible and let God tell us about the families He wanted us to have the first look at and what He's telling us in this experience of being a parent. First of all, I want you to consider how that there are few things that are more gratifying as well as heartbreaking than being a parent. It's both. I mean, consider Eve. When Eve had Cain, we're told in Genesis chapter 4, verse 1, she said with this amazing kind of demeanor, we're sure, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. Adam and Eve had never seen babies before. Adam and Eve had never known about this whole thing of childbearing and all this, let alone child rearing. And they had this child, and she said, with the help of the Lord, I've gotten a man. I've gotten a human being. We have a human being. There's three of us now. How amazed she is. Sarah has another expression that's similar, but her situation was so different. Here she's 90 years old, and though she scoffed at the idea at one time, she and Abraham both mustered up enough faith to believe that God yet could still give them a child, though they were past those years. And when Sarah had Isaac, we're told in Genesis 21 and in verse 7, she says in amazement, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. There is this astonishment with Sarah. When she finally sees Isaac, she is amazed at it. And when, after thinking Joseph was dead, mauled by a wild animal, and thinking this for years, Jacob hears the news that Joseph survived and he was the governor of the land of Egypt. And Jacob, or Israel, goes to his son, Joseph. And when he reunites with him in Egypt, we're told in Genesis 46, verse 30, Jacob looks at him and says, now let me die, since I have seen your face and know that you are still alive. It cannot be measured, the joy, the satisfaction in the hearts of Eve and Sarah and Jacob in those situations. But speaking of Jacob, many years before that, he had just left the tent of his father Isaac after deceiving him, pretending to be his own brother, to get the blessing. And Isaac, after realizing with Esau coming in with the food that he had been deceived, We're told in the text in Genesis 27 and verse 35 that Isaac began to shake violently. It physically rattled him. And he says to Esau, "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing." And even more so, the pain, the deep cutting into the soul that Adam and Eve would have felt when they learned that not only was Abel dead, but Cain had killed him. That one son had killed another son. You see, having children opens up your heart like it's never been opened up. Very deeply. And sometimes that means that your heart is filled with such joy and satisfaction that it's beyond measure. Other times it means that your heart is broken at a level that nothing else can break it. Just ask God. He knows exactly what that's like. To be so pleased and gratified with His children and also to be so broken. Also, I want you to see that we've got to expect challenges and disappointments. We're not to be pessimistic. Hopefully, by the end of this morning, you'll see that pessimism has no place in being a parent. But we have to be realistic. Your children are not going to always behave like you want them to behave. They're not always going to do the things you want them to do. You may have problems out of your kids that you never dreamed that you would have those problems out of your kids. But also, they're going to have some problems that you never expected them to have that are no fault of their own. And they're going to have some hardships in their lives that you cannot shield them from. They're going to have some problems in their lives that no matter how hard you try, you can't come into their life and fix it. And all you can do is sit there and go through it with them. You may have to cry with them. You may have to pray with them. But all you can do is just suffer with them. And that's family. And that's life. And that's why we really need God. This is all more than any of us can take. And so that's why we so need God. Because life is going to be difficult and choppy. No doubt that every generation of parents think that now they can fix all the previous mistakes that parents have made. They can somehow, you know, pad the world in such a way that bad things are not going to happen. You know, you do that with a crib, right? I think I had a crib that wasn't padded. It shows sometimes in my head. But now, you know, you have these cribs and you pad them, right? You put little balloons on them or teddy bears or something. You get somebody to sew them up or make them and you pad those cribs. You cannot pad everything for your children. They're going to get some bangs and bruises. And you got to be ready for that. And do your job the best you can. Another reality I want you to consider is that family relations expose character like nothing else. It exposes your strengths and it exposes your weaknesses. It is just such a magnifying glass, parenting is. Like nothing else, really. I mean, if you really want to get to know somebody, get to know them as either a husband, wife, or a father or mother. It is through the prism. Don't you think about this in Genesis? It is through the prism of family relationships that the character of so many of the people of Genesis is seen. Yes, you've got Abraham dealing with some of the Gentiles living near him. You've got Joseph dealing with the challenges of Egypt, Potiphar and Potiphar's wife, and Pharaoh and the famine and the other Egyptians. You've got them interacting with a lot of different people. But consistently in the book of Genesis, the lens we're looking at shows us family relationships. Why? Because that's where our real character shows up. And that's where our faith oftentimes is really, really tested. And that is where our faith really needs to be applied. And those people who emerge from Genesis, you know, many of them find their way into Hebrews chapter 11, the hall of faith, as we sometimes call it. And the reason why they end up as models of faith, when you go back and look at their actual lives presented in Scripture, is because they apply their faith to their family relationships. What kind of parent you are is a great test of your character. You can pass a lot of tests, but if you fail this one, in some ways, the others don't mean as much. It is quite astonishing that many famous people that our culture lauds, elevates, makes heroes out of them, they were awful parents. And I don't do this to, you know, berate someone. I do it by way of example, just like all the examples we have in the Bible. Albert Einstein, thought to be one of the greatest minds in the last 500 years, was a terrible parent. He had multiple marriages. He had one daughter that he had sort of an okay relationship with. He just didn't know how to connect with his children. Everybody else thought he was, you know, the coolest geek ever. Really, by the 1930s, he was considered in American culture the coolest geek. And understand that, I know that sounds like a long time ago, 1930s, but by the early 20th century, technology had made so many leaps that our culture had a fascination with technologies just like we do today. It's just different technology. And Einstein was seen as this face to this, you know, to you know, this great mind. But the man was a lousy father. There is no figure that towers in the history of American culture any taller than Franklin Roosevelt. Franklin Roosevelt was a very poor father. Just look up what kind of legacy he left with his children and his in-laws and grandchildren. Constant problems, alcoholism and suicide plagued them for years. He could connect with millions of people through the radio, but not with his own children very well. It is the true measure of a person, what kind of mom and dad they are. The world can have their standard of what success is, but this is what the Bible's definition is, because the Bible teaches us, it exposes our true character. Can't fool your kids. You know who Daniel Murphy is? If you're a real baseball fan, you do. I didn't really know him that well until just a couple weeks ago. He plays second base for the New York Mets. And the reason why he came to everyone's attention in baseball recently, in the sports world, is that when opening day occurred a few weeks ago, their home opener against the Washington Nationals, Daniel Murphy's wife was having a baby. Actually, a C-section. In Florida. And while the team was in New York playing, he stayed with his wife. And not only did he stay with his wife opening day, which is the day she had the C-section, he stayed with her over the next few days and missed the first three games of the season. Well, the New York press, some of them, barbecued him for doing that. Now, some of those people have had to apologize for their pop-offs, some sports talking heads. They criticized him and said, well, you know, he should have been there, and, you know, he should have gotten a plane and been there and flown back and all that kind of stuff, or at least he should have just missed the first day and been there the other days and all this kind of stuff. And then they got some people criticized them for criticizing Daniel Murphy. And so they sort of apologized. But then other people were beginning to debate this back and forth. You heard this on sports talk and as well as general news. It was interesting. It got my attention because they were talking about fatherhood and baseball too. So anyway, but what was interesting is what the debate centered around. The debate centered around the effect on the team. Some people were saying, oh, it was okay. It was just the first few games. You know, it didn't have that much of an effect on the team, which I agree because the Nationals wiped them out. But, and others were saying, no, he should have been there. The team needed him. And they were saying, people were saying things like, no, this is his livelihood. And this, they were even saying things like, this is what he'll do for his children is leave them this, you know, this money he's making and all this. People were saying that. The other people were saying, well, he should be there because his wife, you know, would be weak and physically in need and those kinds of things. In other words, you're saying, no, after the first day, she was probably okay. She'd be in the hospital. And everybody was missing the point. Because here's the real point. Regardless of the impact on the team, regardless of how much she needed him to be there, the point is, he's the dad. He should want to be there. Where else would you want to be? Where else would you desire to be? Than there when your son is born and there with your wife. That's your place. Because you know what parenting does? Parenting exposes our real values. It exposes our real priorities. And thus it exposes our character. And if we're people of faith, our character should reflect that faith and the right priorities and values. I may have a little trouble when he's playing against the Nationals, but I tell you what, the rest of the season, I'm going to root for Daniel Murphy every time he's at bat. And every time a ball is hit to him at second base, I hope he puts that runner out. Because I think he made the right choice. Your parenting is a window into your character. It might be a little hard this week, but I want you to take a look at yourself. Your kids need you to do it. And also, we see from Genesis that the realities of parenting prepares us that growing pains are going to happen, but so much of the deep and lasting damage that we do, it's self-inflicted in our families. You know, what is true of any family role is true of being a parent. You're going to have clashes sometimes. You'll have clashes with your kids. Sometimes they might be quite strong at certain ages. Some people have more clashes with their kids when they're toddlers. Others have more clashes with their kids when they're budding into the teen years. Sometimes your kids will pull one direction, you'll pull the other. But if you hang in there, a lot of that's just growing pains. If you hang in there, actually, the bond will actually strengthen through those trying times. But there are some mistakes you can make as a parent that are severe. And they're not accidental mistakes. And they're not mistakes of happenstance. They have to do with moral choices. Staying faithful to your marriage partner. Having the right priorities and not putting your work and your career and any physical thing ahead of your kids. Telling the truth to your kids, not deceiving them. It's those moral choices that are the big things. And you're going to make some mistakes as a parent. You should go left and you should have gone right or up and you should have gone down. It takes a lot of There's a lot of maneuvering when it comes to being a parent. But what I'm talking about are moral choices. There are some things beyond your control as a parent, but your moral choices are not. They are under your control. And most of the important stuff about being a parent, you've got control over. Your kids are still going to make their own choices. We'll talk about that this week. And they have their own individual path to take. But as far as your role as a parent, the big stuff, you got control over that. and it centers around your moral choices. And I want you to see, and I think this is the big point from Genesis and the parents in the book of Genesis. And that is about the spiritual effect that the right kind of parenting has. And we see these parents, they had a positive, lasting effect on their kids, many of them. I want you to think about the opposite. Do not ever think that as a father or a mother, that serious choices you make and serious action you take won't affect your kids. They will. A lot of parents want to convince themselves that, well, it won't matter to my kids if I do this or do that. Oh, it will. Many years ago, I lived in another city. And there was a woman in the congregation. Her name was Thelma. And she was up in years. And she had developed cancer. And Thelma had had a pretty tough life. She was a very dedicated Christian. She lived not too far from where we lived, and she had a lot of interest in Hannah at the time, and gave a lot of attention to Hannah. She was real little. And Thelma was divorced. And people at church knew her for years and said that her husband was just trouble and had really done her wrong and had skipped out on her and her son when the son was little. And this was years ago. This was back when divorce was not as common. And actually, she was one of the few divorced Christians they knew in that city. And she raised that kid on her own. By the time I knew Thelma, the boy was raised. I rarely saw him. He was not a faithful Christian. But on the morning that Thelma was having surgery, I went down to the hospital early in the morning, and I was standing there in the hallway outside her room before they took her into surgery. The surgery was really not successful, and actually she died months later of the cancer. But her son was there, and I was talking to her son, and actually her son and I were standing out in the hallway. I think there was a nurse inside with Thelma. And he and I were just chatting. And then here comes this man walking down the hall. And he looked like he had, as my dad would say, like he'd been rode hard and put up wet. Now, if you know what that means, it means that he looked rough. And he just had he was dressed in a sloppy fashion. He just looked like he just crawled out of some bar at 6 a.m. or something. And I didn't know who the guy was. And he walked between me and Thelma's son. And he and Thelma's son just sort of looked at each other. And then the guy just went on in. They didn't speak. They just sort of looked at each other as if they knew each other. And then he went on in. And I thought, well, why is this guy going into Thelma's room? And the son looked at me. And by the time he looked at me, his eyes were all welled up with tears. And he said, because he knew I was looking at him strange, he goes, "It's my dad." All those years later, all it took was for him to walk by. Of course, it was an emotional time. And all that pain just came right back up. We're hitting home this week on some things. And I hate that any of these anecdotes or points would cause anybody pain here. But I want to help the parents here. And I want to help those on the other end not to make bad mistakes, because it affects your kids. Even the ones who act like it doesn't affect them, it will affect them. But I want you to see this point. And that is the lasting positive effect that you can have on your children if you're a person of faith. Because after all, haven't we learned since early Bible classes? These are the patriarchs the patriarchs, the fathers of the people of faith. These were men who led their families and women, Sarah is in that number, to live by faith in God. You see, parenting matters. Never believe otherwise. And it really, really matters in the faith of our children. Now, these patriarchs made a lot of mistakes. They at times committed grave errors. But somehow, like a magnet, they just found their way back to faith in God. Abraham always did. Jacob did. Even Jacob's sons did. They found their way back to where they needed to be. And they did that because they had this abiding faith in the one true God. What these people did as parents is that they eventually, it was rough waters, but they eventually influenced their families to have faith in God. And the faith that they planted in their children, that was their legacy. Because after all, from henceforth, after the book of Genesis, Jehovah is known as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. A father, a son, and a grandson. And that God's identity was tied to the fact that these people came to believe in Him, and that was passed on. And you see, the children of Israel, or Jacob, actually became the people of God. And that is our goal. For our children, not just to be our children, but to be the children of God. You know, all that matters when we finish this life, all that matters, is that we leave here having helped some people know and follow God. And may that be the case with our own children. That we have helped them know and follow the one true God. If you don't invest yourself and apply faith in your parenting and give to your children what they need in a spiritual way, unfortunately, you'll have a lifetime of pain and regret. But if you do, you do the best you can, and they may not always make the right choice, but you apply your faith that's true and abiding to your parenting. And there could be some really comforting years ahead of you. Matter of fact, you can even have a peaceful and satisfying eternity because you passed your faith on to them. Spiritually positive parenting has a real lasting effect. People in Genesis prove that. So let's do the best we can this week to learn how we need to take steps to be parents of faith as we raise these children in a faithless world. Okay, thank you very much.